What's up, everybody? Chef Marcus Samuelson here, and you're listening to This Moment. This week, we're going to do a rerun. Jason is still on tour in the middle of August. I'm out in Sag Harbor. Fugees turned 25 this year. The iconic album that Pross, Lauren, and Wyclef launched in the mid-90s. So we're going to do a rerun of our amazing Wyclef interview. Here comes.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
This moment, 3, 2, 1.
Talk to me about Haiti, Brooklyn, New Jersey. Talk to me about those three places, how you were coming up and you were constantly going back and forth between the immigrant of being in Haiti, but also being in coming as 11-year-old to New York and Brooklyn, what those three taught you, but also Jersey. How these three places impacted you and pushed you through to the highest level?
I was born in Haiti in a small town called Kouadebouke. Literally, I was like the leader of my village. They'll tell you, like, I was no joke. Very African out, butt naked, with like one piece of leaf. Feel me?
Nature boy.
I don't think like people understand the reality of this. So my daddy left me when I was one. He came and got me from Haiti when I was 10 years old, me and my brother. Can you imagine like my parents coming to get me at 10 years old? And the first time I see an airplane, man. Like, and then I would go and say, yo, mes oiseaux vini. And translation for that, the birds coming. When I say that, all of my little warriors come and we all get down and we have these slingshots. You know what I'm saying? Like with
y'all trying to get the bird.
My perspective was like, if we could shoot this bird down, it looks so big from the sky. Like literally, we would have like stock for the whole year. I'm showing you the perspective. So by the time at 10, I saw this airplane, I was so amazed. The reason why the airplane is bugged out is because in the village, I never seen the white person in my life. We have something just like the Indians, but we say blanc, right? Man, it's just like, it's just the way like you in the village, this is how you talk.
Here we go. Yeah. Here we go.
So how scary was that to see white people all of a sudden? Because you must have heard of them, right? You heard that they existed.
No.
But no?
No such thing. Yeah. But I must.
No. Yeah.
So backtrack. This is the first time I've seen a white person. I was with my grandmother. We was in the village. A truck pulls up and a white man gets out. I'm spooked out. And I say to my grandma, who's this? Because the guy goes in the back of his truck and he gets all of this rice and he's bringing it to the village, to us. So I told my grandma, who's this? And my grandma looked at me and she goes, it's Jesus Christ.
Laid it on you, man.
I'm like, yo, in my brain, just peep this, man. I'm a kid, barely 7 or 8. And I'm like, why is Jesus bringing us the rice, but not the fertilizer? I understood the idea of like, you know, planting and growing and all of that. Now, keep in mind, I never seen a white person after that. So my first experience, now me and my brother, we are on an airplane and we see all these white people and they come in to talk to us. But you know, they sound like Martians. We don't know the language, so it sounds like rude. So they literally say, hey, young guys, would you like something to drink? But it just sounds like, you know what I mean? He look at me, right? And he says, yo, who's all these people with these uniforms, right? And I look at him and I say, stupid, these are Jesus Christ's cousins.
Well, at least y'all had a good impression. There was some kind of good idea behind that.
Hey, this is Wyclef Jean, and you're listening to This Moment. Yeah.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
You come from the village, you land in Brooklyn. How was that culture clash for you? I can only imagine it was a culture clash.
The airplane is going down. First thing we see is the Twin Towers and nothing but lights. Mm. And I told my brother, we rich. We made it to the City of Diamonds. And our first stop in Brooklyn is Marlboro Projects, Coney Island. And at the time, Coney Island was ran by the Italian mafia. So anybody who want to Google like Coney Island in the 80s, you get a perspective of where we landed. So we get to the projects, but keep in mind where I come from a hut. And then, so when we pull it up, my daddy, I'll never forget, he had a LTD station wagon. So we get in a car. So to y'all, it's an LTD station wagon. To me, this is like the same limousine that Biggie Smalls was in. We get in this station wagon and we pulling up. And we see these buildings, and my dad says, we live right there. And I looked at my brother, and I said, we rich. Because I couldn't identify All I saw was big buildings. And this is the projects of Marlboro. So that's literally where we got. It was like 10 of us in one small little apartment. And this was Brooklyn, the idea of like not being able to speak English and then learning and picking up very, very fast. You know, what made us move to New Jersey was automatically, because I can't speak English, we being picked on. You know what I'm saying? So I automatically started wearing, you know, my flag, you feel me, on a part of my ass. And my flag sort of like would identify who we are and who's part of what we doing. You feel what I'm saying? And it was like, identifying a tribe. Let me just give y'all some bars. I'm gonna make it real simple for y'all. I'm just gonna do the alphabets. I know B's and C's fellas. R.I.P. to Tookie. He got taken by the Terminator. That's the ex-governor of California, Schwarzenegger. He could get D's nuts for executing Crip leaders now. You on E or out your effing mind, G? It ain't hard to see. It's all a conspiracy. They caught my man in the H, hit him with a Rico A. He hit the freeway like freeway translation. Just another pawn for the CIA. Because where we come from, you either dunking like Dr. J or get caught up in a drama with a K and get slayed.
So in 10 years, from 10 to early 20s, you already, you got a band, you're leading a band, you're in music videos, you're hustling your way into clubs, and you're already a prodigy in music in those 10 years, right? So how did that happen? How did music enter your life?
Music came to my life through the church because my daddy was a minister. Similar to like Aretha Franklin or Whitney Houston and all those stories you hear them gospel, like we literally the church band. So me and my brothers and sisters, Michael Jackson's of the church. So we learned all the instruments in the church, but being that I was in a church, I was also on the street. And I was like, okay, how am I gonna get my credibility in the street? So I learned how to rap, not because I wanted to make songs. I basically learned how to battle rap. And the reason why I learned how to battle rap, I would fight less.
You get your respect that way.
And I literally became the best battle rapper in Newark.
Yo, I can't help it.
Yo, action.
Yo, yo, yo. When I was young, I used to have an afro. I'm not ashamed to say it. I used to go with a fat soul. She waved. About 360. She used to always say, get off of me, white club, you little skinny boy. But now that's beside the point. Now I got older and skinny man packed joints. So for everybody out there that's a fat soul, let's do the dance. Cause here we all go.
And then in high school, a music teacher, I had my bubble goose on my Scully and I was in an auditorium and I was playing the piano and a music teacher came in, but I never wanted like my street cats to see me like playing, you know what I'm saying? I always wanted to
Hood.
And she was like, tomorrow you're going to start jazz. And I was like, I am not doing jazz. That's for old people. I'm going to be a battle rapper like LL Cool J. And kid you not, the next day she put me in jazz. And when she put me in jazz, I learned Miles Davis, Bitches Brew. And I started reading sheet music. And literally, that changed my life. So then I got into Quincy Jones. And then I want to be like this guy. I want to be the guy who create the stars. Because if I create the stars, I will have a job. So then I just focused on like the hustle, the bustle. I used to take the train with my man. We go to New York for auditions. Like I would never take no for an answer. Like we basically bum guard ourselves into... My first music video ever was Eric B and Rakim. Technique.
Don't sweat the technique. Yep.
In the back, yep. Though.
Playing the main instrument, the bass.
Yes.
You know?
A clean teenager, an extra. And we wasn't assigned to be in the video. We wasn't, you know what I mean? For that music video, I should have got best extra of the year because I'm literally shots, bro, on Eric B and Rakim. And what's funny, dude, years later, I go to Eric B. and Rakim show at the House of Blues, and I'm telling Rakim, yo, I'm in your first video. You know how obsessed I am with you.
I promise you, Clef, Questlove actually put out on his Instagram that picture with you playing bass on the Sweat the Technique.
It's like, that's how we all found
that's
out.
That's how
about
we know,
it.
You know what I mean?
And so I'm a cultural bunny, and it's sort of like, so for me, and the upright bass was my natural instrument in high school. And guess what? That just taught me, the music teacher told me something I'll never forget. She was like, when you coming from the hood, don't ever forget, they're going to tell you you could be a rapper. You could be on Hot 97. You could be on Kiss FM. But what nobody's going to tell you is you can be a great composer like Gershwin. So my whole thing was like, yo, I want to get to Carnegie Hall. So when dudes was like, they want to make it on a billboard, I was like, yo, I want to be the first rapper to perform at Carnegie Hall. So I always tell people that's believing in yourself by taking no as an acclamation for a yes.
I mean, 1993, first time I hear the Fugees. It wasn't in its infancy, but it was really starting to blossom. It's at the pinnacle of the golden age, but it was also very orthodox sound-wise, the fashion, the lingo. And already I could tell, I'm a young kid, you know, my parents are American, but I grew up in Sweden. I'm looking at Yo MTV Raps like it's, you know, it's coming straight out of Mecca, right? So anything I see there, I take as law because I'm in love with hip hop culture. But then I see y'all and, you know, the Fugees built on the word refugee. And I'm like, whoa, but this doesn't sound very American. This sounds like the black and brown people I hang out with here in Sweden. They're kids of refugees too. And that y'all called yourself the translator crew. I see y'all step on. Somebody's playing the acoustic guitar. The sound is a little different than what I'm hearing from other American rappers back then. I say the Fugees were really pioneering something new of what hip hop could be. You know, how did you find that kind of space to be like, we're going to do hip hop, but we're going to do it in our way?
Well, I mean, great question. The first part about it is when I got to America, I have those that didn't make it. You know what I mean? They were fleeing and they ended up on the Cuban Sea. You know what I'm saying? Souls is in there. So the word refugee, I felt like whenever somebody heard refugee, they assumed it with dirty people who don't have any, people who's running from somewhere to come from somewhere else. So we was like, we're going to take the word because this is where we come from. You know what I'm saying? And then you know, Lauryn Hill was definitely like an Angela Davis. She already had the mindset at a young age. She had the Panther vibe, you know what I'm saying? Prize, Haiti background. So we was like, we're not creating a group. We're going to create a movement because it's bigger than ourselves. So that's how that word came to be. The idea of instruments inside of the music and me saying, you know, we about to do acoustic record, which is going to be called Vocab. And the first record is going to be called Vocab. It's the Fugees was completely taboo to what hip hop was.
Exactly.
We was very conscious if you wasn't in America and you was watching this, you assume that it's two turntables, a microphone, fly fashion walking around, and the samples would actually come from the actual vinyl. But when we coming up, we watching like Bob Marley and the Wailers. You feel what I'm saying? The Fugees' first signing was to Kool & the Gang. So we would watch like Kool & the Gang performing. Like, and then the early days of Curtis Blow, he used a lot of instruments. So I was like, what's going to separate us right from the gate is we going to be a band, you know? And then once again, I was like, now when we a band, they might not get it in the beginning, but they're going to get it in the long run. As far as like the street credibility and all of that, what you have to do is you have to say to yourself, now that you look back at it, you got to be like, yo, the Fugees was probably the most gangsterous group in history. Tell me one time have you heard us getting people taking our jewelry? Tell me one time have you heard somebody hanging me from the balcony? Tell me one time within the career we have to show up to some place where we can't walk through the crowd with our jewelry. Like, at the end of the day, think about the era and everybody that was talking the gun talk, right? Like, do you think we did not have guns on us? You know what I'm saying? Don't you think we was pure shotted? Like, we refugees, like we from the M4. But what we learned was that we was in America. And being in America with that passport that we had and that green card, one thing we did wrong, we would be deported. And once we deported, then our entire family loses the opportunity of the dream. So we was very conscious of that as we were. that. I told Superman before he take flight, wait for my cue, because his weakness is kryptonite and all that blue that's kryptonite. Y'all like, why is Uncle Y Clef moving like a zombie? That's Tales of the Kryptonite. Listen.
Any musical range, you take over and it just feels, it doesn't feel like it's cover. It feels so authentic. So we, before we were setting up for this, we said, you are our Quincy Jones, right? You truly are that person that any musical genre, and I mean that with, tell me a little bit, you worked with, of course, Santana, but you also worked with Queens. Beyonce, very, very early, Mary J. Blige, and of course, Shakira, and list goes on. But any genre, it just feels right. Where does that come from? Because that's after the Fugees.
Well, that really comes from, it started in Marlboro Projects in Coney Island at 12 years old. So at 12 years old, I had a fascination of the mixtapes that was coming from the streets. And I had a little brother who came from Haiti with me. His name was Sam. And he had a fascination for rock. So literally, so at a very young age, when we was playing in the church, we knew that the church could not speak English. So what we did was we wanted to basically collectively, and this happened just because we wanted to play cooler stuff in the church. Because we didn't like what was going on in the church. Like, we wanted to play. We felt the music could be cooler. So, you know, one week I'd be like, yo, what's that cassette with that white and black cover? And he'd be like, yo, that's the Police. And I'd be like, yo, I don't mess with no police, man. Like, why? Yo, go check it out. That's the Police. Synchronicity, boy. Just listen to what they're saying. But then he put me up on the Police. Synchronicity, you know what I'm saying? Then I discovered Pink Floyd, you feel me? And my mama was a country head. So anything in the house, like The Devil Went Down to Georgia to Find a Soul to Steal, like Charlie Daniels. So my mama was a country head. So literally before, think about it, before the YouTubes and everything, you had literally like 7 or 8 people in the house sharing totally different forms of music. So by the time I got to high school, I understood that one word classified it all, and the word was jazz fusion. And jazz fusion was the idea of the classification of you saying it's hip hop, the classification of you saying it's country, the classification of you saying it's rock and it's classical. But what happens if I tell you the classical guys used to go to Harlem? That jazz guys was doing. And then they used to get back to the classical, you know what I mean? What if I told you the origin of country, which you already know comes from the space? So the thing is, understanding music as an origin, I feel that us as the Asiatic, sometimes they strip us of our powers and we forget our powers and we start to put ourselves in a box. So now we start to conform. That's when they start to make money, right? Because now they say, we are rock and roll. Mm-hmm. We are, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But what happens? The ones that prevail is the ones that say that we are all things. So Bob Marley, the creator of this reggae movement, right? But when you listen to reggae, what is it? It's world music, blues, it's everything.
I mean, I remember 1995. I come from a small town in the south of Sweden, really, you know, corner of the world map, called Lund. 1995, Das Effex was coming to play in Lund. Me and all my friends were really excited because the warm-up act was this group called the Fugees that we really loved. We loved the Nappy Head remix and you know, vocab and these tracks. We were killing that album. So we're like, yo, the Fugees are coming. We were all there in front of the stage watching y'all perform. You know, hip hop was still firmly centralized, coming out of the United States, coming mainly out of you know, New York, sometimes LA, sometimes the Bay Area. In Sweden, hip hop was not a part of pop culture. It was a subculture at best. You know, we were a couple hundred kids that came to see that show. 1 year later, the same group drops the album, 1996, The Score, which is like, it must have been the biggest selling album of that year. 25 million sold. And all of a sudden, this thing that we were invested in, hip hop, this thing that we were so close to and was a part of our identity, was now on all these other Swedish person's lips. You and the Fugees did that. You know, I really want to salute you and thank you being a part of helping to introduce Sweden to hip hop culture.
Well, yeah, I think for us, like right from the gate, like the idea of the refugees message is like, we was very conscious that we needed to go to every little town, every little, because what happens is the migration of refugees is throughout all of Europe, right? So, mm-hmm. right? So we conscious of that at a very young age. So I'm like, look, you know, if we show up in Sweden, you know, we show up in London, we show up, like, they're going to be like refugees there. They're going to leave there feeling inspired, and the crowd is going to leave there feeling inspired, and they just might treat that person a little better. You know what I mean? So that was, I think, just that universal movement. You know what I mean?
But Clef, you also have a very special relationship with Sweden. I remember when you came in the early 2000s, and you're the biggest, you guys are the biggest artists in the world. And I remember you couldn't go anywhere in Stockholm because, you know, the press was all over. My mom was always like, they got to save that boy. He's tired. He's coming out of Cafe Opera. You got to save that boy. She was always rooting for you. My mom was always, I mean, Jason, no, bless her soul, she just passed. But Jason, no, anything black, my mom is always pro. But you also were very close with Avicii. So can you tell us a little bit about your relationship with Avicii?
Like, you know, in Sweden, I'm known, even like the parliaments, I got them bopping their heads.
Yes.
Down to
most definitely.
So, I would even say in the royal house, but we're going to not talk about that today. Absolutely. We're not going there today. So, but I would just say whisper.
Oh, no. Kings and queens be head bopping.
But we're not. No we're doubt. Not going, no we're doubt. Not going there.
My relationship with Sweden, I guess, is like Bob Marley with Switzerland. I just feel like when I'm in Sweden, my soul has been there before. It's like time traveling. Like, that's my place in Europe. Like, I feel comfortable. I feel at home. So as a Fuji, there's still a young little kid, right, who's coming up, some young little genius who's studying the music in a whole different way through this technology. And he's figuring this thing out on a whole nother level. So on my way back to New York, I heard this Wake Me Up song. I'm hearing this guitar come in, you know, and I'm like, yo, then you get that. What is this, right? Because as a producer, it's like, you know, it's like if you hear Bach, I don't care who it is. I was like, yo, I have to get with this, with whoever this is. You know what I'm saying to you? So my man set up a meeting over in New York. When me and Tim got in the studio, it was like Michael Jackson and Quincy Jones. There was some article somebody had sent me. He said, I was the greatest writer that he ever worked with. Do you know we literally have like 25 songs that we did that still ain't come out till today?
Wow.
Wow. Wow. I didn't know.
So he comes in with the computer. Mm-hmm. Coming in, you know, I got my guitar, I got my bass. Let's go. And we start to rock. And I discovered something. I was like, oh man, I have to learn more about these MIDI sessions. The whole world has converted from hardware to software. So if I plan to enter the next millennium, I have to rock out. Meanwhile, he's like, yo, Clef, I'm learning how to play piano. Can you show me this chord or whatever, right? So he called me Clefication, right? Give me that, hit that keyboard, give me the Clefication, right? We connected. Beyond that, we stayed cool. Like, seriously, he felt like big brother, little brother. I think that the reason why he felt that is because he could relate to me because we can talk, because he was that little kid that was like, this is the Fugees, this is the guy. So he called me the Haitian Mafia. I called the Viking. You know, we literally would crack jokes, like, you know what I'm saying? I call him when he got it. Yo, what's up with the Viking mob, man? With my Crips and Bloods out there, y'all gonna have some trouble, right? So he was very pure. I think, like, he will be classified as a genius, like just like Bach, because he came in and he completely invented the genre.
One of the greatest songs, and it's probably Whitney's last great song, is Your Love Is My Love, right? But that is really where you show church. And you can't do this to me. I see keys behind you. Are there keyboards behind you? Jason, are there keyboards behind
you? Absolutely.
How did that song start? Because I don't remember. Jason, do you remember the song? I don't remember it.
I don't.
But my love.
No, how does that song start, Cliff?
Your love.
Can you show us on the key? Because that's the church in you.
I think y'all are going to be able to hear it.
You know, man, we just need to feel it and see it because it is church. Yes.
The grand piano is being opened. The lid is just being opened.
Clap your hands, it's all right. Clap your hands, it's all right. And I'm standing on the front line. That's how I wrote some of that song.
Wow.
Wanted to show y'all the chords on that one.
That's a timeless song. I mean, and of course, hearing Whitney sing those lyrics are just moving to this day.
Yeah, man. You know what's the deepest thing about that song, right? Is this is like Whitney's song after like 8 years. You know what I mean? That's like her coming back, you know? And Clive, who's like a godfather to me, and he hit me up and was like, yo, I need a song for Whitney. And knowing like everything that Whitney go through, I was like, I'm gonna write this song like it's the last song on earth. You know what I'm saying to you? And knowing like Whitney's from the church, it allowed me now to go back to my roots and be able to do something which could be a little more back centered around my roots. So for me, that's one of those records that I really love. And people don't even know I got Bobby Brown singing on the hook.
I didn't know that. Back?
I did not know that.
I got
that.
Bobby Brown doing a male voice. I didn't tell nobody until afterwards. I couldn't tell Clive because he probably thought. And when Whitney was in a booth, her daughter was in the main room. And then her daughter said, sing, mommy. And then I grabbed the microphone and I was like, what did you just say? And she said, sing, mommy. So I sampled her voice. And Whitney didn't even hear that until the final record. She cried.
Can you let us in a little bit about Santana? How was that? Because you really brought Santana back.
So for me, Carlos Santana is like a god for me. And you know, it's like working with Jimi Hendrix. And when Clive Davis approached me, the way to get a connection, it's like Young Thug has a record called Wyclef Jean. And you might not have heard it, but there's something that happens when generations connect. The atoms of genius. Like Santana is like the king of genius to me. So all I did was I just put a math with him. And I was like, yo, you know, at the end of the day, I used to grow up on a play called West Side Story. It was a movie and there was a girl, Maria, and everybody wanted Maria. I'm into like playwriting and all of that kind of stuff and just try to bring it into pop culture.
Yeah.
So being in the studio with Santana was insanely amazing. I wanted to bring Santana, make sure that we get a hit for Santana so bad because the fact that we could look up on the wall and we could see a plaque of Santana, that's like 10 million. It just lets me know that at any time, if I ever want to come back and do something serious, all I have to do is just plug in. Were all equal out the same way that it did with Santana because the proof of concept already exists. Like when you put generations together that respect each other, you only gonna get the best music. Police stopped me. I told him, don't ask why in the stash box I keep a Glock because y'all already know they putting their knees on niggas. I told him I'm a rock star. He like, what that mean? I keep an axe like ZZ Tops.
So are you, so what musically is going on today in your world, Clef? What, who are you connecting with? What are you, you know, you have visions for 21, 22, 23, as far as where you're going to go musically?
Yeah, so I'm in a very amazing place right now. I'm like in the space where Quincy was at 51. I landed what will be Prince of Port-au-Prince with Netflix. This is my version of Lion King.
Wow.
This is inspired by my first 10 years. But when you hear the music that I'm coming with, right, it's like you heard Lion King for the first time. Kid choirs that I'm recording out of Haiti, like just insane. So I'm very excited as a Black composer to be scoring this film. I'm also scoring season 4 of my good friend Lena Wei, who wrote Queen and Slim. So as the hit show, The Shop, on Showtime, and I'm doing, so this is different, right? We're not talking about doing a song, but we talking about Tiger Woods now, right? This is the thing y'all talked about earlier. I told you they only want you in one box. So when you say be a composer, it's like, I want to play golf now. You know what I'm saying to you? I'm very excited about that. The second thing I'm excited about is I am building the first scoring and jingle company of diversity. In a couple of months, Hollywood, Bali, everybody will be able to do B2B business directly with me as someone who's not just a composer, but represent composers of diversity. So at the end of the day, I will be providing source music, just like Jingle Punk do for the studios. Then we're going to open it up so composers could come on the platform.
That's beautiful.
So that's the tech play for me. And then the third thing is, you know, in Haiti in the future, but my main thing is to galvanize the export industry. So coming from the background of a farmer, you know, I plan to not just provide jobs. After my experience, I just want to focus, provide jobs, you know, but how can we bring billions of dollars back into the country?
Clef, as a chef, I want to know, how do I know a good griot? What is the deal? Like, how do I define a good pickles and griot, for example? All the great food from Haiti, but how do I define it? Where should I go? Tell me a little bit about the underground or Haitian food and where I can find it.
In my family, I have a little sister. Her name is Rosa Sharon. So she used to watch my mother's recipe, which is, you know, 79, 80 year olds, right? So she takes that recipe and then she mixes it, her generation, and put it together. So I think the best thing that I'm going to do for you is to get her to make a cup of, because, you know, I think like they sell a lot of stuff online, different things. I might as well break the ice and let you know what's going on. So similar to Jimmy Buffett, I'm going to be opening up the first Wyclef Jean Carnival.
Oh, that's dope.
So y'all just heard that. So the first one is going to be in Florida. So I'm going to get her to do a couple of dishes for you.
No, we do a pop-up. We do a pop-up with her here in the restaurant, right here in Overtown,
yeah,
man.
She does what I do with music. I call it a jazz fusion. She's amazing.
Big shout out and thank you from not just Sweden, from all of us. And you've given us so much, Clef.
All respect due, man. Thank you for coming on.
All right, blessings.
So for this episode, we want to give a special shout out and thank you to Marc Baptiste for making this happen. Also for Mr. Charmant. Check out Wyclef's YouTube series, Run That Back, where he chats to other stars about music, politics, and much more.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.